This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. It has been a busy week for Governor Mike Easley, and in some ways, a trying one. The governor delivered his State of the State address earlier this week and his proposed budget. And as can be expected, the budget is drawing criticism from various groups, advocates for the poor, tobacco companies, even fellow Democrats. And then, late in the week, the State House and State Senate unanimously approved a hurricane relief package for Western North Carolina. That package is $247 million and some change, and that's about $86 million more than the governor thought was needed. WUNC's Laura Leslie joins us now from Raleigh to recap some of the week and the week for the governor. Hi there, Laura.
Hi, Melinda.
Hi. Well, why did the legislature ignore the governor and pass the larger hurricane relief package?
Well, this all started when the governor sent his own task force to Western North Carolina to assess the damages, and his own task force came up with a number substantially higher than anything that's been passed through at this point. So it's a question of estimates and FEMA money. First, the governor is saying that his own task force overestimated the damage and that as time has gone by, they've found out that there's less damage, so we need less money. Plus, the governor is saying that FEMA is committed to, you know, come up with I don't know how many millions of dollars, and so we won't have to spend that money, so we shouldn't tie it up in this fund. Legislators are saying, number one, FEMA is notoriously slow. Number two, the early estimates were not overestimates, and people on the ground today, this week, are saying that, you know, there are millions and millions more in damage than the governor now says there are. So that's why the legislature said, we're going to go with what the people on the ground are saying. We're going to put the money aside. If we don't need it, great. But if we do, it's there.
Mm-hmm. And it was overwhelming vote in both the State House and the State Senate, rebuking the governor on that, right?
It was unanimous every time around. Unanimous through the House, the Senate, and the concurrence. And the House, the Appropriations Committee hearings on this were attended by Secretary of Crime Control and Public Safety, Brian Beatty. And he was the governor's stand-in, and they were pretty harsh on him. So, yeah, it was definitely a rough week for the governor.
Right. And one other thing we should mention, that before the week started, the governor's own pick to be head of the state Democratic Party lost. And it's been a while since anybody can remember that the governor, a Democratic governor, his man would not be chosen for that party spot.
I'm not sure that's ever happened. I don't know anybody that can remember the last time it has. I mean, you know, but the fact that Jerry Meek even ran was kind of a slap in the face, because normally when the governor makes his pick, then other people step out of the way.
Yeah. So I wonder, those are two areas where the governor's been in a losing column this week. How does that bode for him getting his budget through? And we should say that he did propose his budget this week.
He did. And, you know, his budget, everybody can find something to like in this budget, which is the magic of a budget that you can pass. There's plenty of pork barrel allocations for folks in different parts of the state. You know, I don't think it's going to change his odds of getting his budget through, because we have to pass a budget, you know. But this is a starting point, and there's always tension between legislators and the governor over who wants to spend what money on what.
Mm-hmm. And what are you hearing at the legislature? I mean, what is drawing the greatest fire, and what's drawing the greatest support for what the governor's calling for?
Well, the greatest support is definitely going to the education spending. A lot of people are very excited about all the new programs that the governor is proposing that we add. What's drawing the greatest fire are the tax increases. Well, technically, the one's not a tax increase. It's a tax maintenance. It was this temporary half-cent sales tax that was supposed to go away in June. The governor says, no, we need to keep it because we can't afford to give up that kind of money right now. Another one is the cigarette tax that we've heard so much about, this 45 cents over 2 years. And, you know, nobody likes taxes, as Senator Kay Hagan said, and especially not new ones. So I think that's where we're going to see kind of the most struggle over the next few weeks.
Now, there was one aspect of the budget had the governor easing up on the tax for those families making more than $200,000 a year and individuals making more than, I believe, $100,000 a year. What was the rationale behind that?
Well, that was also a temporary tax that was supposed to sunset at the end of the year. And so what he's doing is he's not maintaining it, but he's phasing it out more slowly than he was supposed to. So he is going to let it go, but it's going to extend partially extend for about a year longer than it was supposed to. So he is easing up, but it's not quite as bad as it looks.
Mm-hmm. And some people are saying that this might help draw corporations here, because the executives from corporations might blanch at the idea that we have a tax rate for those in that tax bracket of over, I believe, the state tax of 8.25% or so. Is that one of the rationales for having it go away eventually?
Well, that's what the governor's folks are saying. Yeah. And we do have the highest top bracket in the Southeast. That much is true. But on the other hand, you know, our corporate taxes, almost it seems like very few corporations actually pay much in this state. So it's hard to tell how that would really balance out. And the governor's staff hasn't been able to come up with a single corporation they can cite as having not come here because or not brought new jobs into the state because of that tax.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, stay tuned, and we'll check in with you soon as well on all of this. Thanks so much, Laura. That's WUNC's Laura Leslie joining us from Raleigh and WUNC's bureau there. Now, one aspect of the governor's budget calls for $4 million to be spent on the film industry here in North Carolina, $4 million in what we would call incentives. One person who's been covering that particular aspect of the budget as well as the rest of it is Mark Schreiner, who is the Raleigh bureau chief for the Wilmington Star News, and he joins us from our studio in Raleigh. Hi there, Mark.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Well, as we mentioned before, the governor is calling for $4 million for the film industry in North Carolina. How exactly is that money to be spent? That's more than has been spent from state money before for the film industry here, isn't it?
That's right. The film industry, which at one point was about a $400 million a year business in North Carolina, is down to about $200 million or a little less these days. They believe these productions have been lured away to other states because of incentive programs in places like Louisiana and Canada. And so they put together a fund. And it is a major commitment in the sense that while the governor has expanded a number of programs in his budget and created a few, it's one of the few that's brand new. Mm-hmm. And so the film industry sees that as proof that they've gotten the governor in the government's ear. But they have some concerns that it might not be enough.
How would this money be spent exactly? It's not saying here we're going to give you this pot of money if you'll make your film here. Is it sort of like a rebate program?
Well, there was a discussion between some industry figures and the Department of Commerce yesterday, and they got the first look at some of the details that are going to be proposed from the administration to the legislature. And what they would be is grants. Basically, if you're going to make a film in North Carolina, what you've got to do is save your receipts.
Okay. Right.
And you have to be able to document what you spend. And that means buying lumber and paint and renting cars. And it also means employing people. If you can show that you've got employees that have paid North Carolina withholding tax, you can put that on the pile too. And then you'd be eligible for a grant of up to 10% of what you've spent. And that's where this $4 million figure comes in. Everybody who's a movie fan knows how much movies cost these days. A $40 million movie would be eligible for the entire fund.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that North Carolina now is talking about doing incentives? Because we will talk about this at a greater length through the hour, but for at least two decades or so, North Carolina has been Hollywood East, you know, the third-ranking state in the country after California with Los Angeles and New York State for having the infrastructure on the ground, especially in Wilmington, the area that you cover the legislature for. How is it that now the state of North Carolina has to get around to offering incentives? What was it they came here before for?
Well, it's this idea of runaway productions. And, you know, 25 years ago when Dino De Laurentiis came looking for new locations to scout and ended up in Wilmington, he was a runaway production from Southern California. And now there some states have found that they like the film industry a lot. From a public policy standpoint, from a government standpoint, it's very interesting. It's an industry that spends a lot of cash in a short amount of time. It's fairly clean. You know, don't have to worry about pollution. They come into your state. They spread around a lot of money and excitement, and then they leave. Mm-hmm. And they wrap the whole thing up. And so states, South Carolina, New York, Louisiana, have become very aggressive in offering incentives. Louisiana is probably the king of all these because they offer tradable credits that involve local state businesses. And Louisiana, which has no infrastructure in terms of studio space and talent like North Carolina has been able to lure away productions. And I think one that people might be familiar with is the movie Ray, the Oscar-nominated movie Ray, which was shot mostly in Louisiana with crews and casting directors that came from North Carolina who were lured down there because of the work. And so the argument that the industry in North Carolina is making is we have the infrastructure, if we offer a little money to sweeten it, we should be able to get some of that business back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is the first time, as we say, that this kind of money is being offered. There are some who would argue that it's not enough to lure people here, to lure film companies here, the film producers who ultimately make the decision.
Well, this is the argument that the industry is making, is that when you sit down to plan a picture and you're making the deal, you want to be able to know exactly what you're going to get. And so the argument is being made currently that, well, with only $4 million in the budget, only $4 million, if someone is thinking about making a movie over the next 18 months or 2 years, how will they know that that fund won't be expended by the time they become eligible?
Mm-hmm. How is this plan? I'm sorry, go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say there's another side, too, which, you know, some people feel that these incentives aren't entirely necessary either.
Right. And we will be talking about that actually with somebody who makes that case in the next 20 minutes or so. How is this flying in Wilmington, the governor's proposal for the $4 million? Because that would be the ground zero of the film industry in the state, not to say that other parts of the state haven't been the background for films. But how is this going over in Wilmington?
From what I can tell, they're extremely happy. They feel that they've been heard on this issue, and they feel that they've got big fans in the governor and in the top legislative leaders.
Okay. We'll continue our conversation with Mark Schreiner and talk with others, one who supports the idea of the incentives and a skeptic of that approach. All that ahead on the state of things. And we'll take your calls. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. Should the state be spending money to lure more film productions to North Carolina? All of that ahead on the state of things. Support for the state of things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners who support WUNC. This is the State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. Last year at the Academy Awards, the state of North Carolina was mentioned by name when the film Two Soldiers won the award for Best Short Film. Two Soldiers was shot in North Carolina. It employed North Carolinians as cast and crew. In the 1980s and 90s, much longer films, Dirty Dancing, Blue Velvet, Bull Durham, and television shows such as Dawson's Creek were also shot in North Carolina. The state was boasting a vibrant film industry then, based in Wilmington. But movie producers are increasingly bypassing North Carolina and rolling their film in other states, even other countries that are offering lower costs and bigger incentives. And some in North Carolina say it's time for North Carolina to compete, too, on the incentives front. The governor's budget this week called for $4 million to lure movie productions here, and that's one of the biggest new expenditures in Governor Easley's budget. Today on The State of Things, we're talking about the future and the health of the film industry in North Carolina and this idea of increased incentives to get the film industry to film here and basically to stay in North Carolina. With us is Mark Schreiner. He is the Raleigh Bureau Chief for the Wilmington Star News. Hi again, Mark.
Hi there.
Hi. Well, would the money that the governor's calling for, would that spend the money in the $4 million in Wilmington alone, or would this be spread across the state?
Well, in the latest proposal, and it's a little bit of a moving target, there would be a statewide board, presumably put together by the various film development councils that you have in Wilmington and Charlotte and the mountains, and they would accept applications. And I think there would be some thought given to kind of spreading the money around. Wilmington has been a center of television and feature production. The mountains are a location shooting place. And then, you know, they make a fair number of commercials, television commercials in Charlotte. So there's different kinds of productions. And I think that's been one of the issues as we've moved closer to having a film incentive in this state, is will this benefit be spread around geographically and to the various levels of the industry?
Mm-hmm. Well, joining us right now is Dale Pollack. He is Dean of Filmmaking of the North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. Hi there, Dale Pollack.
Hi, Melinda.
Hi. Well, could you make the case for us for why North Carolina should spend money on incentives? What's in it for the state to spend $4 million?
I mean, obviously $4 million is what we hope is just a start. We hope to see this program grow and expand in future years. But basically, it's a matter of survival. If we don't have some kind of incentives, we are going to be left in the dust. We're already seeing that happening. We're down to one TV series shot in Wilmington, and even there's a question whether that will be renewed. And there has been an incredible decrease in productions coming here to film. They're going to Louisiana, and we're having crew members move to Louisiana because that's where the jobs are.
Mm-hmm. And because Louisiana is offering these incentives.
They offer the most aggressive incentives, but you know, this is a global issue. It's like every other industry. The film industry is chasing cheap labor. So first production went to Canada, then it went to Australia, New Zealand. Now it's in Eastern Europe, and I think eventually it's going to end up in China.
Mm-hmm. Eastern Europe, of course, Romania is where the movie Cold Mountain, the story was set in North Carolina during the Civil War, and the western part of the state, the setting for the novel, wanted to have the movie shot there, but the producers chose to instead film it in Romania. The state of Louisiana is offering a quite a an attractive incentive package, but I've seen some figures that suggest that Louisiana is getting basically less than $2 back for every dollar it spends. And North Carolina, up until the governor's budget this year, has been spending about $500,000 for the North Carolina Film Office. It's a state office. And got $209 million back. So I look at those figures and I'm saying that's like a 400-to-1 return already.
Right.
So why do we need to do more?
Well, because I think there's a big ripple effect in the economy that is not really showing up in what you're seeing from Louisiana. I mean, the restaurants, the bars, the hardware stores, the construction supply companies all do a lot more business when a film production is there. So there's a big ripple multiplier effect that goes through. I also believe that we need to be looking not only at being a destination for Hollywood filmmaking, but we need to be doing more indigenous production in the state. I was very encouraged that out of the 16 films in competition at Sundance this year, four of them were made in the South, and two of the most highly regarded were made in North Carolina. These were small, independent films. They don't need a big subsidy, but they often need help in getting going. And that's where I'm hopeful that the state can really see an opportunity to capitalize on keeping independent filmmaking strong in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Those two independent films you're talking about that were filmed here, they're called Junebug and Loggerheads, and I believe the producer for one of them said that he'd been tempted to go to another state but chose to actually film in North Carolina, set the movie in Winston-Salem. But there was a temptation to go elsewhere because producers are concerned about how much the movie's going to cost. And
it's all about the bottom line. And, I mean, to give you an example, Cold Mountain, had it been made in North Carolina, would have had a 40-day shooting schedule for the budget they had. In Romania, they shot for 120 days. That's the difference in these labor and other costs. Now, of course, the Romanian government gave them the Romanian army. There were no telephone wires. There were other reasons to shoot in Romania. But the bottom line is the bottom line, and producers are going to go wherever they can to reduce their costs, to give directors more time to shoot.
Mm-hmm, okay. We are talking with Dale Pollack. He is Dean of Filmmaking for the North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. Mark Schreiner is with us as well. He is a reporter for the Wilmington Star News. We're talking about the film industry in North Carolina, whether greater incentives ought to be offered to keep the film industry here. The governor is proposing $4 million to that end in the current budget. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. Joining us right now is Bob Orr. He is Executive Director of the North Carolina Institute for Constitutional Law. He's also a former justice from the North Carolina State Supreme Court, and he's here in the studio. Welcome, Bob Orr.
I'm delighted to be here, Melinda.
Well, you're a skeptic about incentives in general with state money, but if you could talk about the film industry in particular, do you have issues with what the governor is proposing?
Well, the film industry and the incentive grant that we're talking about is really the tip of the iceberg around the country in the use of incentives and the war among the states to try and lure jobs from one state to another. The incentive issue, and this is certainly true of the film industry incentives that we're talking about, is bad public policy. And from our perspective, we think it's unconstitutional to be using the tax dollars of the citizens of North Carolina to selectively subsidize individual companies or corporations to the exclusion of others.
Is there a better way to attract the movie business to film here in North Carolina?
Well, historically, economic development and the recruitment of businesses to North Carolina was based upon the labor force that we had, the educational facilities that were provided, transportation, tax structure across the board, and aggressively encouraging people to come to North Carolina to do business. There may be selected ways to attract the film industry. Certainly the School of the Arts is a resource that hopefully the film industry would look at. But it's unfortunately what you're going to see and what you have seen is the companies are going to play one state off against another, Louisiana versus North Carolina versus California, and squeeze the states for as much money as they can. And inevitably, they tend to go to the largest and wealthiest of these corporations.
So, but if North Carolina is going to compete with the Louisianas and the other ones who are the upstarts who are trying to attract the industry there, if I wonder if the other side might make the case that if they're trying to compete with it, it's and not offer incentives, it's like fighting with both hands behind your back.
Well, that's why ultimately this is a national issue and why ultimately the solution lies with the Congress of the United States under the Commerce Clause. The circumstances around the country are such that hundreds of millions, maybe billions of dollars in local and state tax revenues are being handed out in these various subsidies to selected corporations. And so it clearly affects interstate commerce. And so ideally, and I think most North Carolina economic developers would admit this, is that if we ever got to a level playing field where this sort of free agency and buying off companies by the states was put to rest by federal legislation, North Carolina would prosper over and above what we're doing now and save hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue.
Now, the North Carolina Institute for Constitutional Law, your group, has also opposed the tax benefit that was given to Dell to settle in the Triad area. And Dale Pollack, is the film industry like Dell? The rest who would be getting some kind of tax incentive?
No, I think the Dell situation is different because that's a manufacturing plant that has permanent jobs and will have an enormous positive impact on the economy of the Piedmont Triad. And I understand what Mr. Orr is saying in terms of this. These are large corporations playing the states against each other. There's no question about it. And, you know, why should we be enriching Sony or News Corp or Disney or Viacom? And there is, I think, an argument to be made about that. But I also feel that the chance of federal legislation on this is so distant as to be unseeable. And the government's not going to step in. A lot of states would claim these are states' rights issues. And they don't want the federal government telling them what they can do and can't do with their local tax revenues. The bottom line is we used to be the number three state in film production following California and New York. We are in grave danger of having already lost that. And I think if we don't step up and at least be competitive on the field, there is not going to be a level playing field in our lifetimes. And if we don't step up and compete on some level, we're going to see a mass exodus of the crew base of North Carolina going where the work is.
Well, Bob Orr, what would you say to that? Because that is a large component of Wilmington's economy. At least it had been, you know, in the 80s and 90s, maybe scaling back some.
Well, certainly. I mean, we're facing across our state and across the country a number of industries that are either moving out of particular states or moving out of our country and locating overseas. And I think that's clearly a concern. But one of my questions would be, where do you draw the line? The film industry? Sure, it'd be great to have. It's an important industry. What about the golf industry? We bring in, millions of dollars with tourists coming into North Carolina to the Sand Hills, to the Wilmington area, to the mountains to play golf. Do we start subsidizing private golf clubs or facilities? Pick any number of industries, and you can make a case that spending tax dollars would help generate jobs. But one of the things that I think people forget is that you're going to have a committee here that's going to cherry pick which company or companies get these grants for the film industry, And I suspect they'll start playing off the mountains versus the Piedmont versus Wilmington on what local incentives will be added to sweeten the deal, just like Dell did in the Triad, playing Guilford and Forsyth and Davidson off against each other. And so you get a handful of people having their business subsidized, and then the thousands of North Carolinians and small businesses and middle-sized businesses pay their taxes, don't get any credits to offset them. They don't get any cash grants subsidizing their businesses. And it's simply not only unfair, but I would say, as we indicated before, unconstitutional under our state constitution.
Well, I'd like to bring Mark Schreiner back in. Mark, has that been worked out about how you're going to decide who gets what money? Is there that possibility of it going as Bob Orr is talking about here?
I suppose there's always a possibility. The proposal that's being discussed now does include some commentary about local, what they call local incentives. And this is usually cash money from city or county governments. We've already seen this happen in the case of the television program One Tree Hill, which had the local governments, New Hanover County, City of Wilmington, I believe, provide money in a sense to match the $500,000 that the production got from the state coffers last year.
Mm-hmm. And but there's a question proposal about whether it's going to stay. Will it film a third season in Wilmington or go elsewhere where it's, you know, cheaper or has more incentives?
Right. I suppose that calculation is probably going to be done every season. Mm-hmm. But in the proposal that's being discussed now, yes, there would be a state board, and yes, there would be with each project, with each application, a consideration of, well, what is the local match going to be for these state dollars?
It does seem, Dale Pollack, when I hear that conversation Mark and I were just having about One Tree Hill, it sounds almost a little bit like those deals with the major league sports teams that are holding, you know, communities over the barrel, saying, we'll move our team if you don't give us the brand new stadium on a smaller scale. but if the TV production and, you know, you give us this year, we'll stay here in your wonderful town and film. But, you know, we don't know about next year. Is there the possibility that, you know, communities could be taken in a way? And is it still worth doing?
Well, I think Wilmington is a special case because they have a big infrastructure to support. You have Screen Gem Studio there. You have a lot of reasons for the city and the county there to step up and do incentives. I think we shouldn't, though. It's really like there's Wilmington and there's the rest of the state. And the rest of the state has a real vibrant film scene going on. There is an enormous amount of commercial production in Charlotte. There is an increasing amount of independent film production in the Piedmont Triad. We had five films, independent films, shoot here in the last year. My students, when they graduate and while they're in school, are making feature films in North Carolina all year long, not just student films. So I think, you know, Wilmington has its issues. I don't really see this council or whoever is going to decide on these projects playing regions off against each other. We are very unified on the State Film Council, of which I'm a member, of trying to increase production throughout the state. Mm-hmm. Wilmington has its own issues, and, you know, I know this package is going to be important to Wilmington, but it also has to be meaningful to Charlotte, to Asheville, and to Winston-Salem.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Guillermo is in Cary. Hi there, Guillermo.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess I'd just like to make a couple of quick points. Earlier it was pointed out that $4 million isn't really a lot of money to a Hollywood film company. You know, I mean, Bruce Willis can make that much himself in one movie. But the other problem I'm having is that we're talking about state funds, and the last time I checked, we were in a budget crisis, and my wife is a state employee. They have been squeezed pretty hard by the state. They're still cutting back benefits. She gets retroactive memos talking about how they're reducing mileage payments, cutting this and that. So I just have a hard time seeing how it makes sense to spend taxpayer money to subsidize these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. What about, how do you feel about, like, what was done for Dell to bring the computer company into the Triad? I wonder.
Well, like it was said before, Dell is a manufacturing plant that has a lot more stability, that is a lot harder to pick up and move, hopefully, ideally. Movie production comes and goes, and movie production doesn't always leave great things behind. I'm not quite sure, but I remember The Fugitive was filmed in western North Carolina, and I thought I remembered hearing something about the big train wreck that was left behind, maybe not being cleaned up. Mm-hmm. But I just I just don't see where it makes sense to spend this money.
Well, thank you for your call, Guillermo. Mark Schreiner, I wonder if the movie industry maybe has a harder road to hoe because it could be seen as a little more frivolous, shall we say, than the product may seem more frivolous because it's entertainment after all, versus, say, a computer company coming to a town. Is that part of what might be an uphill battle for it?
Gosh, I don't know. Certainly, I think the thing that we've been talking about here is the transient nature of just the way that the industry is designed. And that is why, in a sense, I guess we've come to this point with this particular incentive proposal, because to tell the truth, there are several members of the legislature have been trying for years to find them some kind of incentive. And the traditional bricks and mortar incentives can't apply because they don't become North Carolina corporations subject to franchise and corporate income taxes, and sometimes they don't have a lot of employees who pay North Carolina tax. So it's a industry in search of an incentive that fits it particularly. And so what we've seen here with the governor's proposal is how he proposes to solve that problem.
Well, one final question, and you can say yes or no to this, but to all of you, we pay gasoline tax to pay for roads. How about a tax on movie tickets to finance the film industry in North Carolina? Bob Orr?
Normally, I wouldn't be in favor of taxes, but if you're going to subsidize the film industry across the board, that's probably a legitimate tax to impose. And I suspect there would be those who would oppose that.
Okay. Dale Pollack?
I think you can count on that there are people opposing it, because basically what you're doing is you're taxing the distributors and the theater owners. And I'm not sure that's the way to fund production within a particular state. I really think that there's a valid economic issue. You know, Melinda, movies are they're an art form, and they're also commercial entertainment.
But and you'll have to say it in about two more seconds because we're about to wrap.
This is a huge trade issue because we bring in more revenue to the United States through the film business than almost any other cultural means.
Okay. Well, I would like to thank you all for joining us today. Dale Pollack is Dean of Filmmaking at the North Carolina School of the Arts. Bob Orr is Executive Director of the North Carolina Institute for Constitutional Law. Mark Schreiner is Raleigh Bureau Chief for the Wilmington Star News. Thank you all. Just ahead, a studio performance by the band Chatham County Line. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. The band Chatham County Line is making bluegrass and new traditional music fans sit up and take some notice. Yet the Triangle-based musicians actually got their starts in rock and roll. Dave Wilson, John Teer, Chandler Holt, and Greg Riedling grew up listening to rock and later played it in bands. Then, a few years back, they heard some bluegrass music, and they hit on the sound they were looking for. They formed a band, and now Chatham County Line has released its second CD. It's called Route 23, and half of the band, Dave Wilson and John Teer, are here with us in the studio. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, I want to clear up one thing. The name of the band is Chatham County Line, but I understand none of you live in Chatham County.
No, we all live in Raleigh now. We moved to what they called on the Andy Griffith Show, Capital City. And our banjo, what happened was right when we started, our banjo player lived right off of 54 in Chapel Hill, and we couldn't find his house. And once we reached the Chatham County Line, I say we never looked back because we knew we were lost. And we saw the sign, and it must have been a sign, so that's what
right.
happened.
That's right.
Well, your story is one of, I guess, being lost, but also finding bluegrass music after mm-hmm. playing rock and roll in bands before. What was it that you heard in bluegrass music those years ago that made you switch?
It just seemed to have a heart and soul that was missing in, I was exposed to a lot of classic rock and the kind of classic rock stations. I grew up in Charlotte, and I was exposed to a lot of that style of music, and I wasn't exposed to really good sounding music that seemed like it came from the heart as much as what I heard when I finally heard bluegrass and people like the Kentucky Colonels and the Stanley Brothers and John Hartford and people that were making music that I feel was almost true to the world or true to themselves and true to their upbringing and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And it just spoke to me more than other types of music did.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that the same thing for you, John Teer?
Basically, you know, I was turned on to bluegrass a little bit later on. I remember hearing it a lot when I was younger, but I was really introduced to it more towards, I guess, junior, senior year of high school, and I really took to it. It's kind of the same thing with Dave, where it was just the rawness of it and the feel of how real it was compared to everything else I'd been hearing before. So it really kind of turned my world upside down, and just got really just dove into the whole bluegrass field and got into a bunch of those artists like the Kentucky Colonels and Bill Monroe and those guys. It was just it was the best thing I was hearing at that time, so really went with it.
And so what you've done is you've forged this new music. You've taken this traditional style, but you write a lot of your own songs.
You got it, yeah.
And the title track from your new CD is Route 23.
Route 23. When I was young, like I said, I grew up in Charlotte, and my father ran a hardware store in downtown Charlotte for many years, Query Spivey McGee, right on College Street. And they closed the College Street to do some construction down there and for about 6 to 8 months, and his business never survived it. So a lot of that really surfaced in this song, really subconsciously, because I didn't make that connection until my mom said, hey, this song is that story, you know? Mm-hmm. Do you want us to play that one for you?
Would love to hear it.
Sure.
All right. One, two, one.
I spent my whole life since I was high as a knee by that two-lane blacktop they call Route 23. My daddy ran a service station in a pump steady shine. I'd watch him wash the windshields, keep the oil up to that line. Well, the days, they were long, but the money was good. The only thing that changed were the seasons and the shapes of the hoods. Till the governor came on the radio in late 55. Said the state's gonna build a new highway, one that's fast, smooth and wide. With that new highway, no one stops anymore. And you can't make a living without swinging that door. Sign by the roadside still says come on in, but the bulbs have long since burned out not to light up again. Well, daddy was as stubborn as a mule in the snow, saying good folks return to the places that they know. But after the gravel arrived and them steamrollers wide, all those good folks left me and daddy and those two lanes behind. But that new highway, no one stops anymore. And you can't make a living without swinging that door. The sign by the roadside still says come on in, but the bulbs are long since burned out not to light up again. Well, the calendar on the wall still reads 1975, and no one crossed off the day that my daddy died. We laid him in the ground neath that old sycamore tree that shades a boarded up gas station out on Route 23. But that new highway, no one stops it anymore. And you can't make a living without swinging that door. The sign by the roadside still says come on in. The bones are all but hauled up, not to light up again.
Well, thank you. Dave Wilson on guitar, John Teer on mandolin, half of the band Chatham County Line. That was beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Lovely lyrics. And very nostalgic. And nostalgia plays a role as well in your stage presence when you go out and do live shows.
Yeah, we sure do.
And one element of that, we should say, is your suits.
Yeah, I went to see Del McCurry, the Del McCurry Band, which is probably one of the the best act in bluegrass music today. I saw them, they played the Carolina Theater probably 4 or 5 years ago. And I wasn't really as familiar with the bluegrass stage show as I am now. And when they hit the stage with the suits and ties and the single microphone, just the choreography of that show and the interplay between musicians and voices on that completely bare stage was something that spoke to me, and that's what I wanted to represent if we were going to do this band.
So you do that when you're performing in concert, mm-hmm. unlike here in the studio today, but yeah. you're all around one microphone.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, and we actually really enjoy the whole aspect of dressing up too. We always say if you look good, you play good. So we kind of go with that motto.
Now, are these matching suits?
No, they're not matching suits. No. We're not the Temptations, but maybe if a tailor was to hear this and make us matching suits, we wouldn't be afraid of wearing them.
Are these the thrift shop specials?
Yeah, we go. We hunt through the vintage stores and the thrift stores and. Sometimes you can go to country and western stores, and they've kind of gone away from the traditional look of suits and things like that, so you can look on these sales racks and find some goodies.
Yeah. But thrift stores, definitely. We venture there quite often.
Right. Well, I'd love to hear another song, Dave
sure.
Wilson and John Teer, if you would. And John Teer again on mandolin, Dave Wilson on guitar. This is another song you wrote together.
Yeah, this is our first Jagger Richards, Lennon McCartney co-write. First of many, we hope.
Hopefully.
And see if y'all can figure this story out. It's called The Arms of the Law.
We danced that night so close together. We said that we'd never part. I thought it for worse, so for better, but I didn't see the chains on your heart. For your father kept the peace in that county. And although they said justice is blind, he led me in cuffs to his jailhouse for trying to make you mine. He said your love was taken as they led me down the hall. Break from this prison to see if there's truth to his tale. And if you're locked in the arms of another, I'll be better off locked in this jail. He said your love was taken as they led me down the hall. Now you're in the arms of another, and I'm in the arms of the law. Yes, I'm in the arms of the law.
Arms of the Law, co-written and performed there by Dave Wilson and John Teer, harmonizing a la Lennon and McCartney, as you
<There you go. laughs>
Working on it. There
yeah,
you go.
Now, what's different about doing harmonies in bluegrass than when you were in rock and roll bands?
Maybe that you can hear them on stage over a drum set and a loud bass player and, you know, guitar amps and stuff. We've definitely done our spell in loud bands. There's something about playing bare on the stage with just your instrumentation and your voices, it's an exact representation of what you can produce. And one thing about using the single microphone is it sweetens a little bit and combines before it ever hits the microphone. So you can hear that in the audience as well as on the stage. So when we sing together, we can really hear each other and get a feel for what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, on the CD that Chatham County Line has just put out, Route 23, of course, you have the rest of the band. We should mention Chandler Holt and Greg Reedling. And they're filling out the sound in their way, too. And I thought we should listen to some of the CD. And there's a song there called Louisiana Freight Train.
Here we stand, my ring still on a hand. No way to make her forget.
Chatham County Line there from their CD, Route 23. You have some help there from Caitlin Carey.
Yeah, she's a good friend of our producer, Chris Stamey, who lives right down the street from the studio here, and she was kind enough to come in and sing a little bit of backup on that.
So how often are you out on the road performing?
We probably do about 2 weeks a month, maybe on average. So about half the year we're out on the road. We're hoping that with this second record that that we do get out on the road a little bit more, and those things are happening for us now. We're going to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, which is a huge party if you like Texas beer and Texas-style food down there. It's good stuff. And we're going to Colorado after that. And then hopefully in late September, early October, we're going to go to Holland in the UK, and we're looking forward to that and everywhere else beyond.
Great. Well, Dave Wilson and John Teer, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. Appreciate you having us.
Dave Wilson and John Teer, along with Chandler Holt and Greg Reedling, are members of the band Chatham County Line. They're celebrating the release of their second CD, Route 23, Saturday night at the Lincoln Theater in Raleigh. And over the next few weeks, they're going to be performing across the state in Boone, Black Mountain, Wilmington, and Carrboro. And if you want more information on all this, you can check out our website at wunc.org. I thought before we go away, you could play us one more tune. What are you going to play for us?
Sure. Let's do a little bit of Nowhere to Sleep Tonight. Two, one, two, three.
I have nowhere to sleep tonight, not a place to lay my head. If I don't get near some kindling deer, somebody's gonna find me dead. Left you, babe, I thought my life would turn. But ever since that day, this heart just burned, burned, burned. Trying to make my way back to you, but honey, I lost my way. Can't find me a place to stay. 'Cause I have nowhere to sleep tonight, not a place to lay my head. If I don't get near some kindling deer, somebody's gonna me dead. I wanna coast to coast, trying to earn my keep. A couple bucks a day don't buy this rim the place to sleep. And that old man winter, he's keeping me on the roam, never to find my home. 'Cause I have nowhere to sleep tonight, not a place to lay my head. If I don't
And that's the state of things for today. If you have a comment about the program, you can drop us an email here at sot@wunc.org. Support for the state of things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thanks for listening. I'm Melinda Pencott.
And I was keeping warm on the park bench with the local press. And I saw your picture in the socials in a long white dress. You found another man with whom you could pay the rent. Trying to raise my tent. 'Cause I have nowhere to sleep tonight, not a place to lay my head. If I don't get near some kindling deer, somebody's gonna find Nobody's gonna find me there.